ready to get and stay fit? Welcome to Fit Positive Confident with Dr. Gordon, where the focus is on your whole person health, physical, mental, and spiritual. Because your health can be affected by so many factors, Dr. G covers a range of topics in this program, from eating healthy to world-shaping events. So relax and enjoy the show.
All right, folks, welcome back to the show, Fit Positive Confident. And my wonderful guest today is once again one and only Dr. Richard Jensen, coming from the mountains and the hills of, I always forget, is it Tennessee or Missouri or one of those states? Oh, by the way, good news for you, Richard.
Yeah.
Larry Ellison and Oracle is moving right there in into your neighborhood.
Oh, that's not good.
I think they said
good news.
I think they said they're bringing in like 15,000 employees.
Yikes. Well, they need to go down to, I don't know, Puerto Rico or Florida. Florida would be a good place for them to land.
No, I don't know. They're moving their headquarters. It's right there next to you, like 30. Where are you? You're close to Nashville, right?
No, we're down near Chattanooga.
Oh, okay. So one or the other. They're going either Chattanooga or Nashville. I don't know. But you can check it out. It might be Chattanooga.
Man, I hope it's Kentucky or New York. It'd be much better.
I forget where they are headquartered right now. No, I thought it was Colorado, but it's not. I know they have a big deal over there in Denver. But anyways, you guys are... That part of the country is just growing like crazy. Everybody loves it down there.
Yeah, I don't understand why. It's an absolutely horrible place. It's super hot. It's super humid. There's bugs everywhere. Bugs like you could not in your wildest imaginations dream up these bugs.
Mm-hmm.
They swarm. And everyone's walking around here armed to the teeth. It's like the wild, wild west here.
Yeah.
Drivers are absolutely atrocious. Roads are terrible.
Everywhere
you look at people with like old toilets in their mm-hmm. front yard that they're calling planters.
So you would definitely not recommend.
It's Redneckville, man. Just stay away.
You would recommend to everybody to just stay away, right?
Yeah, just stay away.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. I can tell you one thing. The state of Tennessee is not going to hire you as a spokesperson for the tourism industry.
I hope they don't. I'll do it for free to be an anti-spokesperson.
Are we getting to the point where we just don't care about just about anything that's going on in the world?
Yeah.
Is this like the next?
I told you before we started this program, I'm just tired. I don't care. What do you want to talk about? Yeah, whatever. I don't care.
But yeah, see, are we coming to the point where everybody's so overwhelmed by the sheer amount of useless information that's out there and the fact that we can do nothing about it? You know, whether it's the wars or whether it's the economy or inflation, the stock market today at one point went down by like 650 points, ended up down 375 points. You know, this is the end of April now.
Yeah.
You know, and so...
Well, that's going to hurt California a lot. California's entire budget revolves around the stock market.
So there you go with it. And then I read another report that the lower paid segment of the population basically stopped eating at the restaurants at this point because they just don't have the money. And everybody else who is eating in the restaurants, they're putting it on their credit card. But, you know, and that's not saying, so you have all of that going on, and then at one point you just say, okay, screw it. I don't need to follow any of this news.
Yeah, I think that the whole American culture at this point is just swirling the drain, and I think everybody knows it. I think everybody has the belief at this point that, well, I mean, Ben Franklin said way back in the day when he stepped out of the Constitutional Convention for a while and a bunch of bystanders, a bunch of crowd outside said, what do we get? And he said, well, a republic, if you can keep it. So Franklin knew. You know, the bottom line is the founders made the vast mistake of believing that people would value freedoms, liberties, inalienable rights above all things. And they were just simply wrong about human psychology, because people don't value that. People value what they perceive to be comfort and safety, and people are just lazy. And so they're not gonna actually do any hard work that they're not absolutely forced to do.
So, but let me ask you this. I mean, there was, at the time of the Founding Fathers and for the next 200 years after that, there was a lot of hope, you know, when people were coming to this country from Europe and all the other parts of the world. There was a lot of hope that life is going to be better and that they're going to make money and they're going to provide future for their kids and all of that stuff. And it seems that we are come to the point now where everybody is just struggling to survive. Nobody's even talking about, you know, making it really good in America.
Well, I think the whole problem, this is going to sound nutty to some people, so hear me out. But I've thought about this a lot, and I honestly believe that the most fundamental problem in what has occurred is this destruction of the notion of rights. And now immediately everyone is going to say, but wait a minute, we have more attention on rights right now today than ever before in American history. And I would say what we have is an attention on positive rights, not negative rights. And that's where the United States went off the rails.
Are you saying that that's affecting the economy as well?
Everything. Absolutely everything that you see wrong with the United States of America today ultimately emerges from the fact that people lost track of what rights actually are. And so today, all you hear is I have a right to this and a right to that, and the federal government needs to pass a law to protect my right to whatever. And everyone wants there to be a federal law to protect this right and that right and the other right. And all of these rights that are being protected are nothing resembling what this nation was founded to protect. And so what people are expecting of the United States of America today is an absolute dichotomy compared to what this nation was set up to protect. And consequently, we've completely lost track of protecting what the United States was set up to protect. So we've turned it literally on its head, and it's all a vast confusion about the nature of rights.
Does this also extend to the other countries where they also feel that they have the rights to expect such and such things from America?
Yeah, and I think that as soon as politicians discovered that they could gain and solidify and expand power by promising things and by passing laws to make things rights, to basically buy votes, there's countless ways of buying votes, but the most fundamental way revolves around promising people that the federal government in particular is going to give you rights and protect certain rights. And so, of course, other nations looked at this transition occurring. A lot happened leading up to and, particularly World War II. The process really started prior to World War I, but World War II is where it really pitched off the cliff. And we became very much a global economy. We became very much a global village. And so all of the perspectives that were changing in that time frame in the United States of America, which really revolved around Wilson and FDR, there was a sea change of what counted as a right. And now we're living out the baleful end results of this change in what counts as a right.
So, for example, during COVID, everybody got these government loans that eventually they did not have to repay. And everybody expected it and felt that, okay, you know, you're telling me that I got to stay home and I can't go to work and I can't open my business. So everybody expected they have the right to that money. Is that a good example of what you're talking about?
I think it's an extension of what I'm talking about. I think it's an extension of a perspective that emerges from what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is that our founders set up a system of negative rights, which is the right to be left alone regarding. So my right to life is a negative right, which is to say, hey, don't kill me, and you've satisfied my negative right. By doing nothing regarding me whatsoever, you've satisfied my negative rights. That's why they're called negative. You don't have to do anything to satisfy my rights. You just don't violate my rights, and you've satisfied them. But positive rights, by a huge distinction, require you to actually actively do something, expend resources to satisfy my right.
Okay, let's take a break. I want to come back, and I want to ask you a follow-up question on the negative rights. So we'll be right back, folks. In the studio today, Dr. Richard Jensen, a philosopher and a historian, and the guy who studies ethics a lot, knows a lot about all kinds of things. But today we are talking about negative rights. We are talking about the United States. We are talking about founding fathers. You and I mean, you have talked on this show a lot about the negative rights. And I don't know if I ever asked you, are the negative rights enshrined in some kind of a law or constitution, or are they just the ideas that were put on paper somewhere and they did not become a way of life?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that a fundamental confusion that a lot of people have is they think of us as being under a constitution. Mm-hmm. And they don't realize that the same people that wrote and signed off on the Constitution were involved in the writing of and signed off on the Declaration of Independence. And those two documents are joined at the hip. Mm-hmm. You cannot interpret and understand the Constitution apart from the Declaration of Independence. And I can't make that point strongly enough. If you try to isolate the Constitution out of its historical and philosophical context, then you can make it mean whatever you want. And so the whole idea that we are a constitutional republic implies that there is objective meaning to the Constitution, that you can know what that meaning is, you can demonstrate what that meaning is, and that therefore the Constitution has the force of law because it's not just some vague, fluffy thing that anyone can make to mean anything they want. Mm-hmm. So even the idea that the Supreme Court interprets and defines the Constitution is a vast mistake. The part of the entire idea of during good behavior, you know, you can impeach a Supreme Court justice. Mm-hmm. And good behavior in part implied to the founders that you would have an originalist view of the Constitution, that you would treat the Constitution as having objective meaning, known meaning, and that you would interpret laws relative to that meaning. So the Supreme Court was never supposed to be about interpreting the Constitution. It was supposed to be about interpreting laws and weighing laws relative to the Constitution, where it was presumed that the Constitution had objective and knowable meaning. So that's a really important point to make. I hear all the time people talking about, well, the Supreme Court takes the Constitution to mean blah, blah, blah. The Supreme Court interpreted the Constitution to say blah, blah, blah. Well, so, to the extent they're doing that, it's just a huge mistake.
You're saying that the Supreme Court has the right to interpret the laws based on the Constitution, but it doesn't have the right to reinterpret the Constitution to fit whatever is in front of them at that point.
Right. And so you've got this whole debate that goes on between the left and the right. There are Democrats and Republicans that sitting around going, well, right now we've got a super conservative Supreme Court, you know, all Trump appointees, and so it's all political. And the vast majority of Americans today believe that the Supreme Court is politicized.
Sure.
And unfortunately, I think that perspective has a lot of merit. The question is, how do we get there, and is it possible to fix it? And the answer to both of those questions is, we got there precisely because over time, there were more and more slippages away from the fundamental principles of the Declaration of Independence, which decoupled the Constitution from its fundamental philosophical principles And then more and more people over time forgot those principles and started demanding more and more rights. And so the government became extremely reactive and increasingly powerful to basically feed the needs of the clamoring mob. Well, constituency. So then you've got, yeah, exactly. And so a classic example of this is the fact that now we have elected state senators. That was never designed into this republic. State senators were always supposed to be appointed by the state. They did not answer to the mob. They did not answer to the general public. They didn't have to take this or that particular generally popular position. They were the one, they were supposed to be the adults in the room that were to tell the mob, eh, no, I know that this is what you want, but you're not going to get it. And so the fact that now they're accountable to the mob means there's no functional difference between the House and the Senate. And there was supposed to be a vast gulf between the House and the Senate, where the Senate would represent states' rights and cast all the clamoring of the mob in a larger context affecting the states directly. So you would have never gotten any of this craziness that's occurred over the last 800 years come down the pike if it were not the case that state senators are now elected. So this is one of just countless examples where, you know, we think we're going to turn the dials a little bit and pull the lever just a little bit and tweak things and reinterpret. And the Constitution is supposed to be a fluid document. And so obviously we have to interpret it according to modern perspectives and blah, blah, blah. This is all a vast mistake. All a vast mistake. The Constitution has objective meaning. It is objectively discoverable. It is anchored in objectively demonstrable philosophical principles. And those were fundamentally enshrined in the Declaration of Independence, which is the foundation and anchor of the Constitution.
So it's interesting that the founding fathers put together in place all kinds of checks and balances, yet overlooked. Yep. This is obvious example: Supreme Court going in the wrong direction. There is nobody to hold them accountable for straying away from the original intent.
Yeah, I don't think that's true. I think that the reason that we see things developing the way we do isn't that we don't have the procedures in place to do anything about it. It's that the people lack the will to hold their representatives and the Supreme Court accountable.
People don't want to be
the procedures.
People don't want to be bothered.
Well, you were talking at the beginning of this program about how we're just inundated. We're awash in so much information, and everywhere we look, there's so many problems, so much corruption, you know, that basically people are just inert. They're just tired. They're just overwhelmed. And so the problem is that the average citizen in the United States of America today literally feels that they cannot assess it all. They cannot know what to think. They have opinions. Often they have very strong opinions. But in the back of everybody's mind, they know, I don't really know how this whole game is played. I think I have an idea of what's going on, but I basically don't know what to believe at this point. So everywhere you look is corruption. Everywhere you look are problems. Everywhere you look are we're reaping the results of what we've been sowing for decades and decades and decades. And yeah, people are just fed up, overwhelmed, untrained, ignorant, completely out of touch. I mean, who's a philosopher today? I mean, let me just ask that question, right? I mean, you know, people hear I'm a philosopher. Well, what the heck does a philosopher do? What's the point to philosophy? What a useless discipline.
It's not being used anymore.
No one thinks in these terms anymore.
It's like horse and carriage. And it's so not being used anymore.
Exactly. And so the problem is that when you abandon an anchor in rigorous philosophical thought, well, then anything goes and anything will go.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take another break, come back, and I want to ask you a couple of more follow-up questions on all of this. Folks, we'll be right back. All right, welcome back in the studio, Dr. Richard Jensen. You know, a couple of things I wanted to mention. We are talking about the fact that everybody's feeling helpless and giving up on trying to figure out what's going on. And, you know, I grew up in a communist country. And I can tell you this from personal experience, from observing people around me when I was growing up as a young person over there. Communist, if you had, for example, the communist government, and you knew that they were all communist, and if they were doing all kinds of shady things, whatever, you know, even oppressive things towards certain people. But if you had the opportunity to make a living and eat and go on a vacation and just take care of your family, you basically tuned out and didn't care about who was in the government or what the government was doing. And I see that happening here today, you know. We have a government that's spending trillions of dollars over the budget. They're going into the debt tremendously. They're sponsoring all kinds of stuff all over the world. They are, you know, I mean, the government has become so huge. But most people are like, you know what? I haven't gone on a vacation for 2 years. I want to take a week off. I don't care anymore what's going on. Most people are like, I want to watch the basketball game tonight and just relax. Mm-hmm. And it's the same all over the world. I mean, I don't care. And now I can understand how people in Iran, for example, or China, or let's take any kind of a government, oppressive government out there. People just tune it out at one point. Yep. Because, hey, you know, if I can go to the fish market and buy fish and buy rice, and I have food for my kids, then, you know, I'm going to tune out.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm sympathetic with the fact that people just are overwhelmed and feeling helpless. The flip side of the coin is I'm also angry with them. So I'm schizophrenic in my perspective toward people because, yeah, I feel their pain. I feel their helplessness. I think I understand a good measure of why people feel and react the way they do. But the flip side of the coin is it's also a character issue. I mean, instead of watching reruns of Friends or whatever, you could actually be doing some research, and it's not that hard to do, to get to the bottom of what was the Declaration of Independence all about? What's an inalienable right? I mean, when I ask people questions, and I do all the time on forums and in personal discussions, asking people questions like, so you have a right to this and a right to that and a right to the other thing. So is it an inalienable right? And they just look at me blankly. Well, I mean, the Declaration talks about inalienable rights, but it only lists a few of them. And surely I have a lot more rights than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so there you go. The conflation between negative and positive rights begins. Yeah, go ahead.
It's been said that when a society becomes wealthier, that people then can afford to take time off to do arts and philosophy and things that, you know, things that involve brain power and all of that, you know, creativity and so on. And we were, I don't know, we were that, I mean, you were asking why people don't do philosophy anymore. And I'm wondering if that's the reason that we are not, that we are going back, you know, to where people just, we are not as wealthy as of a society as we think that we are. And people just don't have time anymore to be able to do those things.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case. When the Declaration of Independence was framed and signed, it was an agrarian society under the thumb of the most powerful empire on the world at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And people were in a subsistence living condition most of the time. We are wealthier and with more leisure time today than they ever had. We don't have to work from sunup to sundown to feed the cows and get the harvest in and canning and hand washing clothes and the litany goes on and on. What's happened instead is that our priorities have gotten completely skewed.
Mm-hmm.
We have become lazy. I mean, we've had generations and generations of easy living, a cell phone, you know, basically wired into your head from birth. Every imaginable convenience is taken not as a luxury, but as an absolute necessity. We're lazy, we're fat, we're entitled. We have all the food we could want.
Delivered to us.
I mean, right. I mean, and so we have the leisure time, but we don't prioritize doing anything with it.
We choose to spend our time on things of low quality entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and then we justify that by saying, well, life is just so irritating all the time that I need to check out. You know, I can't take it. I can't live in this state of helpless anxiety all the time. So, you know, alternate reality. Rather than to say, you know, things have gotten really bad and the government has become literally all powerful. And that was clearly not what was intended. So how did we get here? And therefore, what can we do? What steps can we take to undo how we got here? Because the fact is, the American people, still a bare majority of the American people, are still the most powerful entity on Earth, the most powerful entity in all of human history. We have the power today to turn this whole thing around. Today.
Mm-hmm.
But we spend our time checking out and bickering over minutiae and completely detached from the principles of our founding, the principles of what this nation was supposed to be. Don't even want to hear from anybody about what the actual underlying principles are. Sheesh, I think a third of the nation at this point doesn't even believe there is anything like objective principles. They think everything is just, you know, you make it up. Human beings make it up. Might makes right. You know, be on the mighty side. And if you're not, well, then try to become mightier so that you can get power, so that you can rule, because that's all that matters, is being mighty and ruling. And this is an incredibly narcissistic and amoral perspective for people to take. And yet a huge swath of society has come to believe some version of that.
Well, generally speaking, society, I mean, people will follow a strong leader. There hasn't been anybody for decades in American politics that would have qualified to lead people in this direction. Every leader that we have had since John F. Kennedy was, you know, a part of this one group or the other, and he did not have the vision that you are describing, and therefore people are leaderless.
Yeah. Well, but imagine, how do you get elected when your platform involves abstractions? So, I mean, like, let's say, imagine that I'm going to run for president.
Right. Well,
first of all, I lack $1 billion, because it takes about $1 billion now to become president.
Well, that's, so, with inflation, it's going to be a little more by the time you're ready.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So what's my platform? Okay, well, I want to return to a commodity currency. And people are like, what? What's your position on abortion? Don't care. What? You don't have a position on abortion? Yeah, it's a states' rights issue. The federal government has nothing to do with it. What about gay marriage? Don't care. It's not a federal matter. I'm running for president of the United States. Don't care. Federal government has no role in it. Well, what about universal health care? Don't care. The federal government has no role in it. Wait, you're stripping away everything I care about. I mean, how can I vote for you? You don't seem to care about anything I care about. Well, no, actually, I do. I care about everything that's pissing you off the most, because you want to look at why we have inflation. You want to look at why every single thing you buy is costing you more tomorrow than it does today. Why is that? What caused that? That's what I care about. The fact that you don't have your inalienable rights, the fact that a squatter can literally walk into your property, squat down, and take it from you just by the very act of trespassing, and you just suddenly de facto lost your property. I care about that. I care about your property rights in general. I care that you don't have to live in a society in which everything is being stolen from you, both by the government and by criminals, and nothing's done about that. Okay, so I could go on and on and on about things I care about, but ultimately, that all comes down to some fundamental principles that you've completely lost sight of. So I don't have a popular message to tell you. I don't have a message that has anything to do about the stuff that you think you care about, because all of that stuff just keeps us bickering among ourselves. And so we don't end up gathering around the core of what's wrong with this nation. So nothing will get fixed, and you can just keep moaning and sniveling, and nothing will get fixed.
If you ever run, I'm going to save this clip, and we're going to use it. We'll be right back, folks.
Well, that'll bury me.
All right, back in the studio with Dr. Richard Jensen. We're talking about his potential run for the White House.
Yeah, no, we're not. This was a hypothetical. This was a thought experiment.
So you're saying that if a philosopher like yourself ran for the White House, your platform would be getting back to the original philosophical foundations of this country.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. My whole goal would be to cut the size of the federal bureaucracy by about 90%. It would be to eliminate the Federal Reserve. And when I say eliminate, I mean gone. Its charter dissolved. Money, no more of this monopoly money, absolutely not. It's going to get anchored in a commodity. Gold has worked, silver has worked, you can pick real estate. Oh, now all the economists are screaming, oh, you're just a philosopher, you don't know anything about what you're talking about. Yeah, I do. I do know what I'm talking about. Oh, but we need money in the system, and what the Federal Reserve does is to ensure liquidity. Yeah, it's complete and utter garbage, just utter garbage. Liquidity is not a function of pumping more monopoly money into the system. That's inflationary. That's not liquidity. I could go on and on and on. My point just is, I'll debate anybody about any of these points. The bottom line is we live in vast confusion because we have completely abandoned core philosophical principles.
What perceived benefits would people lose under that system? And what other benefits would they gain? What positive things would they gain under that system?
Well, first of all, it'd be really, really hard and painful. And so there it is. I mean, we have no stomach for anything that's hard and painful. Because you would go through, well, I'm going to say pretty much my entire first term would be just upheavals everywhere you look. It would be brutal. There would be supply chain disruptions. The entire economy would have to basically do a reset. You'd have to sit down with Congress and come up with a complete revaluation of the dollar, anchored in whatever the chosen commodity was. There'd have to be a reissuance of money as a result of that. The whole idea of like a national digital currency would go right out the window. First of all, the fact that anyone is taking that seriously is so horrific to me, there are no words. A national digital currency. What do you think that's about? That's not about convenience. That is 100% about control. 100% about control. Now the government controls absolutely every tiny there is no transaction that the government doesn't have its fingers in. It can tax everything. It can micro-tax everything. It can monitor everything. It can criminalize everything. It's the closest thing to a Minority Report society that we could possibly imagine.
Well, basically, that's already, I think we could argue that that's already happening. So if we did go to the national digital currency, we would just improve the system.
No.
Wait.
As long as you can still pay for things in cash, the fact that I can still pull $5 out of my pocket and hand it to you means that I still have a measure of freedom.
Well, what I meant, we would improve the surveillance system. We would improve the government control system.
Well, if that's our goal, okay. Oh, but we have to have all this surveillance. Why do we have to? Well, it keeps us safe. Okay, first of all, that's all an illusion. Second of all, the price you're paying for that supposed safety is an outlandish price to pay. And finally, we wouldn't be having to worry about people coming onto our shores and bombing us and taking down our World Trade Centers and so on if we weren't involved in all kinds of things around the world and domestically that we never should have been involved in the first place.
Some nasty stuff, too.
Now you're just an isolationist, right? I mean, I can already hear all the because what we do when we get into debates, when we get into discussions as a country, is we immediately label, box, and package and shelve whatever we're hearing. Oh, you're just an isolationist. Oh, no, absolutely not. I'm not an isolationist. Oh, you sound like a hyper-conservative to me. No, I'm not a conservative. Well, you're sure no liberal. I'm not a liberal either. But you see what I'm saying? People are determined to think in non-nuanced, utterly superficial, dismissive terms.
Yeah, yeah.
We elect presidents on sound bites and little drive-by shooting snips of cleverness. It's an absurdity. It's an obscenity what this country has become, but it's a reflection of us. And so that's why I say, on the one hand, I'm sympathetic with the results that people are enduring, but on the other hand, I'm disgusted and angry because we're getting exactly what we deserve. We're getting exactly what we... Thomas Jefferson said, people never get the government they deserve. They get the government they tolerate.
Christine Lagarde, who is the president of the European Central Bank, said, we are rolling out digital currency for all of Europe, and we are going to do even the small amounts, not just anything over 1,000 euros, but even the small amounts, because a lot of bad things happen with small amounts of money.
Oh, yeah, so absolutely.
in order to prevent terrorism, we are going in this direction. You're not going to have any money anymore.
Well, what blows my mind is that the majority of the nation today claims to be Christian and claims to believe in the book of Revelation and claims to have some understanding or another about the mark of the beast and the passage in Revelation that talks about that you'll not be able to buy or sell unless you have the mark of the beast and blah, blah, blah. Well, no one seems to sit around and think, how could that ever practically really be implemented? How could you possibly pull that off? I mean, just think it through. Let's say that you had this all-powerful government and it literally said, you don't have a certain social score and so we're shutting you down. You know, whatever the metrics are, whatever the criteria, how could they do it? How could they shut you down? Well, a necessary condition of being able to pull it off would be something like a digital currency. You have to have control over every single tiny microtransaction where the government owns the currency in the strongest sense and controls its flow in the tiniest sense. And then and only then could that passage in the book of Revelation be satisfied. So I'm not thumping the Bible. I'm talking to atheists as well as Christians or Muslims. I don't care. The point just is it's bad. It's about control.
Well, we got 20 seconds, so I think we need to come back and maybe do the whole program on the Mark of the Beast. What do you say?
That'd be good, clean fun. Yeah. No, I'm not going there. I'm just saying, look, if you're a Christian and you claim to worry about that, well, then you ought to be horrified by the prospect of digital currency.
Richard, God bless you, buddy.
Yeah, you too.
Bye-bye, folks.
Be sure to tune in next time for another unique perspective on your whole person health with your host, Dr. G. And don't forget to share the goodness with friends and family and visit our website at fitpositiveconfident.tv and follow Dr. G on Twitter at Dr. G Fitness. God bless and stay healthy.